Now, in a black sky, a sliver of sunlight crests the Earth. Rays of light shoot off the continents, and a three-dimensional word orbits the planet. Universal. More words appear below, a division of NBC Universal. Now, electrons revolve around the nuclei of glowing blue atoms. As we shoot backwards, the particles become spheres blanketed by nebulous clouds. They swirl into the radiant vortex of a spiral galaxy. Words appear from the clouds. Relativity media. Now, rays of light wash across words carved into a cracked and weathered stone surface.
Even a man who is pure of heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf. When the wolfsbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright.
An engraving below the word shows an image of the full moon. A ray of light flares briefly on the relief. The depiction becomes the real moon glowing brilliantly in a cloudy night sky. Our view sinks away from it through a tangle of nearly bare tree branches into a forest. Titles: Universal Pictures presents in association with Relativity Media. A view from high in the tree shows a man hiking alone through the misty woodland. He warily holds a lantern aloft.
Show yourself!
His light flickers as he treads among the barren, towering trees. Fallen leaves blanket the ground. Words appear. Blackmore, England, 1891. The man wears a bowler hat and carries a walking stick.
I know you're out there.
He scans his surroundings, then sidles through a brambly thicket beside an immense tree trunk. Bags show under his eyes, and long sideburns frame his face. Halting, he lets his lantern shine on a misty glade before him. His gaze darts anxiously, and he steps forward. A half dozen pheasants take flight from behind a log. The man musters a brave sneer. A six-foot creature slashes a bloody gash in his stomach. The man drops his lantern and the creature claws his face. Clutching his gut, the man flees. The six-inch cuts on his face bleed profusely. He stumbles on dead wood and drips gore. As he races toward a mausoleum, the bipedal creature flexes its clawed hand. A title engraved in stone reads, The Wolfman. Blood drips down. Daytime. A pair of galloping horses, toes engraved in stone, reads, The Wolfman. Blood drips down. Daytime. A pair of galloping horses tows a carriage on a country road.
Dear Mr. Talbot, I believe your brother has mentioned me to you in his correspondence. I'm Gwen Conliffe, Ben's fiancée.
A servant brings the writer tea.
I'm writing to inform you of your brother's disappearance. He has been missing now for several weeks, and we fear the worst. It has come to my attention that you are currently here in England with your theatre company, but that you return to America soon. I understand that you have not spoken to your family in many years.
A playbill on Gwen's desk reads Lawrence Talbot, Hamlet.
But I implore you to help us find Ben. Please come home to Talbot Hall.
In the carriage, Lawrence, a pale man with exotic features and dark eyebrows, folds the letter. He looks out a window. A dilapidated three-story manor house looms over a vast estate dotted with sheep and towering trees. Later, a door cracks open, and Lawrence peeks inside. A stuffed and mounted lion and tiger wear frozen snarls in the shadows. Lawrence creeps in across a marble-tiled floor strewn with dirt and debris.
Hello?
Stepping past a fireplace, the actor faces a grand staircase. A coal-black Great Dane runs at him. Lawrence brandishes his walking stick. Licking its jowly chops, the dog obediently lies down. At the top of the stairs, an older man with a white beard aims a shotgun at Lawrence.
Lawrence?
Hello, Father.
The patriarch descends.
Lo and behold, the prodigal son returns. I hope you're not expecting a fatted calf. Stay.
Reaching the foot of the stairs, he glances at his gun.
We don't have many visitors.
You seem well.
I've often wondered what you look like.
The old man wears a coat with a tiger fur collar. He guides Lawrence past Samson.
You've come about your brother, have you? Stay.
Yes. Miss Conliffe learned that I was in London.
Samson?
And sent me a letter saying that Ben has disappeared. Thought I offer my help in any which
yes,
way
it's
I
a
can.
Splendid idea. Lawrence, a splendid idea. Too late, I'm afraid. Unfortunately, your brother's body was found in a ditch by the Priory Road yesterday morning. I assume you have something to wear for the funeral.
Sir John.
You remember my son, Lawrence? Singh, my servant?
A turbaned man gives a faint bow.
Master Lawrence. It's nice to see you, Lawrence. It's good that you're here.
Has Miss Conliffe been notified?
Mm-hmm. She's upstairs in her bedroom asleep.
In a dusty but luxuriously furnished great hall, Sir John plays a piano. Lawrence winces tearfully.
Where are they keeping Ben's body?
Later, Lawrence rides a horse across a sturdy stone bridge into a quaint village. Townspeople eye the stranger curiously. Now a butcher in a stained striped apron escorts the actor into an ice house. Lawrence covers his mouth and nose with one hand, and the butcher shuts the door behind them. Sweeping his gaze around the space, Lawrence spots a shrouded body lying on a table. 10-foot walls of ice surround it on two sides, and a set of claw-like ice tongs dangles from a pulley overhead. The butcher brings over a handful of personal items.
Your father instructed me to bury your brother's effects with him. Seems a shame.
Lawrence soberly accepts the items.
Thank you.
He steps toward the body.
I wouldn't, sir. It's,
I missed his whole life.
The actor covers his nose and mouth with a handkerchief and plods onward. Frowning sympathetically, the butcher returns to his work. Lawrence hesitates at the veiled corpse of his brother. He lowers his handkerchief and heaves a resolute sigh, his breath misting in the cold air. He stares at the body's contours hidden under the plain cloth. Lawrence pulls back the shroud. A half-skeletal face grimaces behind torn patches of gray skin. Lawrence recoils. Later in a tavern, Lawrence studies a golden medallion on a chain. It depicts a saint circled by three wolves.
What if it wasn't a beast at all? And a cunning murderer? Someone who bore a grudge against one of these men. Misdirect the authorities, he kills the men. And then he tears up the bodies to make it look like a wild beast was responsible.
Ridiculous. Who would go to such lengths?
About that gypsy dancing bear, it could have done it.
That mangy thing. Kill three men, I doubt it.
I saw the bodies with my own eyes.
A pastor speaks up.
Unnatural wounds. Most unnatural. Made by a fell creature, I say.
Damn gypsies wandering the countryside, bringing their woe and deviltry with them. They show up, and 2 weeks later, this happens. My guess is Ben Talbot went to their camp to have it off with a gypsy whore. The bear gets hold of him, and they dump what's left of him in the ditch.
Got nothing to do with the gypsies.
The gossips face a scruffy man.
25 years ago now, me pa found him. Quinn Noddy and all his flock. Brains and guts and God knows what, lying all over the moor for a quarter mile. And Quinn... look on his face. Like he'd been eaten alive.
Lawrence looks up.
Whatever did it was big, had claws, and didn't mind a load of buckshot. After that, my pa went home and melted down my ma's wedding spoons and cast silver bullets on them. Wouldn't leave the house on a full moon. From then on.
Still say that bear's to blame.
The fuzzy-haired barkeep corks a bottle. Lawrence finishes his drink and taps the glass down. Evening. Dark clouds drift over Talbot Hall. Inside, candle sconces and chandeliers shed meager light. Lawrence turns a corner just in time to see a maid bustle into a bedroom. He strides toward the door. The maid answers.
Oh, can I help you, sir?
I was hoping to have a word with Miss Conliffe.
Just a moment, sir.
A mirror reflects Gwen seated on the bed in her undergarments. The maid shuts the door. Later, Gwen exits the bedroom in a simple gown. Her long, wavy hair frames her face and trails down her back. Lawrence strides up to her with Ben's belongings.
Miss Conliffe.
He bows to the melancholy woman.
I am Lawrence.
I know who you are.
I'm sorry we're meeting like this.
She nods.
These were Ben's. He'd want you to have them.
Gwen slides a lion's head ring onto her thumb, then opens the leather cover of a keepsake photo portrait bearing her likeness.
If there's anything you need, anything at all, please let me know.
She sorrowfully shakes her head.
I want to know what happened to him.
Lawrence locks eyes with her.
I'll do everything I can.
Thank you.
She glances down at Ben's things and works her bow-shaped lips.
Thank you for coming.
Later in the Great Hall, Lawrence gazes up at a portrait of an exotic raven-haired woman in a crimson gown.
I saw Ben's body today. What kind of animal could have done such a thing?
I've seen the work of a Kodiak bear and a Bengal tiger. Nature at its most vicious, but, must say, I've never seen anything like this.
Sir John blows out oil lamps.
People in town say it was a man.
He blows out a candle on the piano.
I mean, a raving lunatic at loose on the moor. Yes, it's possible, but I think I would have run him down with my dogs. On the other hand, the wounds were so terrible that only something human would seem capable of such wanton malevolence.
I found a strange medallion among Ben's belongings.
Yeah, St. Columbanus. He was an Eastern saint. He was also a gypsy.
So did Ben have dealings with the gypsies?
Yes, he was our negotiator. The local gentry would pay a fee, and the gypsies would keep their criminal activities to a minimum, and they would move on once they'd sold the local lads all the wine and dark-haired ladies they could stand.
Sir John puts on a pair of goggle-like spectacles and blows out a final lamp. He gazes into a large upturned telescope trained on the moon.
That orbit maiden with white fire laden, whom mortals call the moon, glides glimmering o'er my fleece-like floor.
And by the midnight breezes strewn.
He views a gibbous moon, only a sliver of its face in shadow.
She exerts enormous power, doesn't she?
Thin mist passes before it. Lauren steps over and peers into the eyepiece.
I wish things were different.
Never look back, Lawrence. Never look back. Past is a wilderness of horrors.
Sir John ambles off. Lawrence lingers in front of the telescope, bathed in the moonlight.
Lawrence, I'm glad you're home.
The actor peers cagily after his father. Later upstairs, he turns a corner and strides down a hallway with a candle. He halts in front of a closed door, then treads closer. His candle gleams dully on the handle. Opening the door, Lawrence gazes into an abandoned child's room. Furniture lies piled up, some covered in sheets. In a flashback, the exotic woman from the portrait chases two young boys around a fountain. A well-maintained Talbot Hall stands beyond the beautifully landscaped garden. Back in the present, Lawrence picks up a toy figure from a table and blows dust off of it. Taking a seat on a bed against the wall, he inspects the figure thoughtfully by the light of his candle.
Lawrence.
He lifts his haunted gaze and stares across the room, lowering the toy.
Lawrence.
In a flashback, blurry images of a boy lying in bed shift over one another. The boy sits up. Young Lawrence lies in a bed opposite him. He sits up. Later, he lights a candle, then blows out the match. His brother follows him forward.
Lawrence, I'm scared. I'm out to bed.
Lawrence slinks down the hallway alone and descends the staircase. In the grand entryway, he passes the taxidermied tiger's head. Outside, pale moonbeams lend an ethereal glow to the night air. Lawrence walks down a wide pathway flanked by towering topiaried animals. He passes a rhinoceros, then a gorilla. Now Lawrence steps between two tall hedges. His jaw drops. Before him, spots of blood bloom on a stone path by a reflecting pool. Two transparent images of the boy walk forward, shifting out of phase with each other. One vanishes. A younger Sir John crouches on the ground, loosely cradling his motionless wife in his lap. A deep gash mars her throat, and blood trails down her neck, soaking her nightgown. An open straight razor lies in her hand in a pool of blood.
Mother?
In the present, Lauren squeezes his eyes shut. He closes the door to his childhood bedroom. Daytime, the moon still shows in the stark sky. Under tall, leafless trees, a glass-sided hearse drawn by four dark horses rolls down the road. Lawrence, Sir John, and Gwen follow on foot. Lawrence glances back at his brother's fiancée. A sheer black veil drapes her hat, head, and shoulders. Later, mourners line a path from the hearse to the estate's domed mausoleum. Four coffin bearers carry Ben's casket inside. Gwen, Sir John, Lawrence, and Singh follow. Later, Lawrence wanders down a path through the misty woods. He comes upon Gwen leaning on a mossy boulder. She fidgets morosely, her weight propped on one elbow. Seeing him, she sits up.
Hello.
Hello.
Lawrence joins her at a ledge overlooking a river in a deep gorge. They converse near the upper shelf of a waterfall feeding it.
Ben said that you played here as children.
It was our refuge.
From what?
You mean from whom?
Your father, he has a way with being distant.
She regards Lawrence with a wan smile.
Ben told me it was because I reminded him of your mother. He said you did as well.
Lawrence removes his black gloves.
Which is why he put me in an asylum for a whole year. He shipped me off to my aunt in America.
Now at the manor, servants load a coach with baggage.
You sure you won't stay one more night?
My father has lodgings at the inn, and that's more convenient for the train, so.
Turning away from Sir John, Gwen faces Lawrence.
When do you return to London?
Not till I find out what happened to my brother.
He gives a small nod. Gwen faces the carriage, and Sir John lays a hand gently on her back as she climbs aboard. Lawrence gives a glum twitch. Through the departing coach's window, Gwen briefly fixes a tearful gaze on him.
Lawrence, that's all well and good, but I think your inquiry could wait until tomorrow. The moon is full tonight, and I'd prefer that you stay inside in the event that your raving lunatic theory is correct. I don't want to lose you, too.
As his father steps away, Lawrence stares after the coach and wrings his hands. Later, he rides a galloping horse away from Talbot Hall, ducking as he passes under a footbridge. In fast motion, clouds course across the darkened sky, and the enormous full moon rises. Now, Lawrence steers his horse down a winding path toward a camp of parked gypsy vardos and other wagons. As he arrives at their camp, a small boy leaves a bonfire and runs toward him.
Take your horse, sir.
Lawrence hands the reins over and faces a bearded man.
He says you must stay in the camp. The woods are not safe.
Ask him if he knows anyone who sells these.
Ben's medallion.
You want to talk to Maleva.
To who?
Maleva.
The boy points. Turning, Lawrence faces an ornately painted Vardo. Later, he sets the medallion on a table.
It's found in my brother's body.
A woman with frizzy iron gray hair stares at it.
Her caravan shows up. Three men are killed.
He sits facing her.
I think it's a coincidence.
There is no coincidence. Only fate does. But she plays a hidden hand.
Lawrence lays a hand on hers.
Tell me about my brother.
The older woman stares at it, then meets his gaze with widening eyes. In the woods, torch-bearing men approach on horseback. A gray-bearded gypsy keeping watch puts his fingers to his mouth. Passing him, they ride into the camp. The gypsy watchman stares after them through narrowed eyes, holding a rifle at the ready. A beast tackles him out of sight. Meanwhile, the riders invade the gypsy camp. Stepping out from Maleva's Vardo, Lawrence watches the fuzzy-haired barkeep approach a gypsy bear handler.
Come on, Jesus!
Give us a bloody bear, you old snake antler. We know what's been going on.
Nonsense. He dances. That's all.
A constable arrives.
What's going on here?
We come for the bear.
It done all the killing.
For goodness sake.
He's harmless.
The bear glimpses the beast and rears up. The men watch a young gypsy fall face down, his back torn open to the ribs. The vigilantes scatter. Lawrence exits the Vardo, scanning the chaos. The fuzzy-haired man hides in a tent. Outside, a fleeing man holds the stumpy remains of his left arm. Lawrence grabs a gypsy.
What happened?
It's the devil! The devil!
Lawrence hurries through the camp, passing a man whose leg has been torn off at the knee. In the tent, the fabric wall shows a silhouetted figure creeping past. The barkeep fires, killing a gypsy. Clawed hands tear into the tent from behind and drag the barkeep away. Now Lawrence sees his horse rear up. As the constable notices a Vardo rocking violently, Lawrence retrieves a rifle from his saddle. Now the constable reaches toward a mangled corpse inside the wagon. A paw rips off three of his fingers, then skewers its claws up under his chin and out his mouth. The constable's eyes roll back and the creature yanks him inside. A girl wanders. A woman searches frantically. Perched on the dead constable, a beast's-eye view watches the mother in the distance. Lawrence tracks the bloodthirsty creature's advance. Raising his weapon, he fires. He runs alongside the wagon, shooting repeatedly as he glimpses the charging beast between them. As the creature rushes upon the woman, Lawrence tackles her out of its path. Maria comes running. Lawrence sees the gypsy boy fleeing the camp and the creature in pursuit. Lawrence takes up a rifle and some bullets lying by a corpse. Ahead, the creature bounds along a ridge leading to the boy. Lawrence takes aim. Two gypsy men observe Lawrence running after the boy. About 50 yards ahead, the boy scrambles over a brushy knoll toward a circular arrangement of megalithic stones. Lawrence draws closer as the boy enters the ancient druidic monument. Lawrence's form emerges from the mist.
Boy.
The boy's eyes widen and he dashes away. Reaching the heart of the circle, Lawrence takes cover behind a tall central stone, then edges warily into view. His puffing breaths show as vapor in the night air and dissipate in the mist. Lawrence scans his surroundings. In every direction, the moonlit fog and shadowy megaliths reveal no sign of movement. Lawrence peeks around the central column, eyeing a trio of vertical stones. Turning away, he steps out from his hiding place. His jet black brow knits as he cautiously advances. Blanketing mist swirls at his feet. He quickens his pace for a few feet, then turns abruptly, taking aim. He spies a drifting shadow. As he looks up, the creature pounces from atop the central stone. They roll along the ground, and the creature chomps into the base of Lawrence's neck. Arriving gypsies shoot at it, and it flees. As Lawrence clutches his spurting neck, the men surround him.
Go back, get help!
Get Maleva!
Now in a tent, Maleva tends to Lawrence as other gypsies look on. The boy joins them. A young woman with darkly lined eyes faces Maleva.
Once he is bitten by the beast, there is no cure.
A man yanks the boy back.
You should let him die.
You would make me a sinner.
She stitches the bite.
There is no sin in killing a beast.
Is there not?
With one hand clamped on the wound, she presses the other to Lawrence's brow. Subtitles. What of killing a man? Where does one begin and the other end? Many will suffer if we let him live.
Sometimes the way of fate is a cruel one. He can only be released by someone who loves him.
Maleva nips the suture thread with her teeth. Lawrence trembles and writhes. The women steady him and finish dressing his wound. Now, under an overcast sky, a horse-drawn cart makes its way up to Talbot Hall. From a high window, we watch it arrive in front of the house. On its open bed, Maleva sits with a supine, blanket-swaddled Lawrence. Sir John strides out to the cart, followed by Singh.
Lawrence.
He stares into the cart.
Holy Mother of God. Help me with him, Singh.
They pull him out. Now clouds race across a brightly glowing moon. In a four-post bed, Lawrence lies under thick blankets. By the foot of the bed, Gwen leans into view, lights a candle, and blows out the match. Through a window, a moon half-veiled by cloud shines light into the room. Lawrence sees the beams as glittery shimmers dancing brightly before Gwen. Sitting, she demurely opens a small book. Lawrence's heavy eyelids close. Gwen faces him serenely. More clouds race before the moon, flickering its light upon Lawrence's bed. Lawrence peers toward its foot. A ghoulish boy with fangs and stringy hair climbs into view. Lawrence hides under his blankets. Peeking out, he sees no one. A wolf-like beast swipes at him. Lawrence cowers beneath the covers, then peeks again. The dancing moonlight shows no sign of the creature. daytime. As a fierce wind blows outside, Gwen reads aloud a few feet from Lawrence's sickbed. At an accelerated pace, the waning crescent moon sets behind the house, then golden sunlight fills the sky. Inside, Sing brings a tray to Lawrence's room, where Gwen sleeps in a chair. Sing halts and stares. Gwen wakes and stands.
Lawrence.
He sits upright, a dark stare on his ashen face.
Get Dr. Lloyd.
Gwen crosses to Lawrence.
Are you all right?
Yes, I feel better.
She faces a nightstand. Regarding him worriedly, she presses a damp cloth to his jaw.
I thought you were leaving.
Gwen sadly shakes her head.
This place is impossible to escape.
She dabs his pale face.
Besides, it's the least I could do.
He looks up at her with a faint, grateful smile. Now a silver-bearded man gawks as Lawrence extends his arm and flexes his fingers. The physician gently lowers his arm and gives his patient a draft of milky fluid.
What did the gypsy say?
Some nonsense about the devil being at Blackmore.
It's remarkable. A week ago, I would have said you'd never use that arm again.
And now?
It seems to have healed itself.
As Lawrence sits, the doctor faces him from the doorway.
I'll be back to check on you at the end of the week.
Thank you, Doctor.
Gwen starts to follow him out.
Miss Cunliffe?
Yes?
I want to thank you.
For?
For prolonging your stay here at Blackmore with us. During this difficult time, had there been some sense of filial obedience, well, you would not have been inconvenienced.
Well, Lawrence was trying to find out what happened to Ben. And now we know it's still out there.
Sir John peers keenly at her.
Nevertheless, I thank you.
Not at all.
He holds the young woman in his cryptic stare, then leaves. Lawrence observes Gwen. She watches the patriarch go, then gives Lawrence a polite smile. Now, drifting clouds veil a moon that rapidly changes phases, from crescent to half to three-quarters full. In his room, Lawrence steps away from a window. Holding a candlestick, he touches his healing neck wound, then curiously rubs his fingers together. At a mirror, he pulls his collar aside and finds a well-progressed scar. Lawrence drags his fingers over it, covers it back up with his collar, and glowers at his reflection. In another room, Sing sits without his turban, his coarse gray hair spilling down his back as he cleans a shotgun. As he peers down its barrel, he spots Lawrence in the doorway.
You're asleep, Lawrence. So should you.
Sing gets to his feet as the younger man joins him.
Is there anything I can get for you?
Lawrence sets down a handheld lamp.
Are you expecting a war?
He eyes weapons laid on a table.
Sikh is a warrior of God. He must always arm himself against evil.
As Lawrence sits, Sing stows them in a trunk.
Do you believe in curses? This house has seen more than its share of suffering. Your mother, your brother, yes, I believe in curses.
How could you stand it here all these years? You didn't have to stay.
Sing reaches for an ammunition box. Lawrence intercepts and opens the lid. He finds gleaming bullets inside.
Silver.
Closing the box, he smirks at Sing.
I didn't know you hunted monsters.
Sometimes monsters hunt you.
His smirk fades and he lifts his brow. Daytime. A horse-drawn coupe arrives in the village and halts. Its trim, well-dressed passenger gets out. His chocolate brown beard trimmed neatly into sideburns and a small chin puff. Two locals watch from a doorway as he collects his modest baggage. Shutting the door, he meets their gaze with sharp, narrowed eyes, then takes in his surroundings. He nods to the coachman, then makes his way up the muddy street. Now he visits Talbot Hall.
Yes, he's been quite seriously injured, Inspector, and he's suffering from a loss of memory. I don't think he could be of any use to you now.
Well, I think at some point he is going to want to talk about...
No.
I do understand. Only if I could have just a few words with him. Completely unofficial interview.
No,
even the briefest exchange could be infinitely helpful to me.
Rounding a corner, Lawrence strolls over with Samson. He offers a polite nod.
Francis Aberline, Scotland Yard. Honored to meet you, Mr. Talbot. I'm a huge admirer. Sorry to hear of your troubles. I do hope they won't impede your return to the stage. Thank you.
Shall we, please?
Lawrence leads him into the great hall. As Sir John steps away, Gwen gazes uneasily after him. In a sitting room, Aberline faces Lawrence, who relaxes in an armchair with a whiskey.
I understood your injury was quite savage.
Yes.
I hope you don't find this prurient, but would it be possible for me to arrange for a specialist to examine you? It's amazing what we can discern by scientific means these days.
Lawrence pets Samson, who sits at his side.
And at your convenience, of course.
Of course.
A great mystery it is, given that there are no natural predators left in England capable of inflicting such horrific injuries.
Well, the savagery of the attack would suggest the action of an animal. Or a lunatic, perhaps. Someone with a history of mental disturbance who's spent time inside an asylum and who may have suffered injuries at the hands of his victims.
I get your implication and resent it. You're clearly aware of my personal history, as I believe I am aware of yours. Weren't you in charge of the Ripper case a couple years back?
You're a direct man, so I'll be equally direct with you. I'm not your enemy, Mr. Talbot. But you've been seen as Hamlet, Macbeth, Richard III, all with that same face. And I'm a prudent man, but ask who else might be living inside that head of yours.
Lawrence finishes his drink and stands.
Good day, Inspector.
Aberline's brow lifts. He blinks thoughtfully, then gets to his feet.
So you won't mind if I establish your whereabouts on the nights in question?
Feel free.
Good day, Mr. Talbot. I'll be sending my specialists to examine you at your convenience, of course.
He strides out, donning his hat as he goes. Later, Lawrence takes a walk to the river. He stops on the dirt bank and stares out with narrowed eyes. Light glimmers on the gently rippling water. It becomes brighter and whites out Lawrence's view. In a flash, he sees the lunging creature. He squeezes his eyes shut and rubs them.
Lawrence.
Blinking confusedly, he finds Gwen approaching.
Yeah.
You all right?
Yes.
What did the inspector say?
Well, he asked a lot of questions.
I'm sorry. I feel so responsible for what's happened to you. If I hadn't sent that letter, you'd be back in New York.
No. It was right that I came back. You mustn't feel like that.
Lawrence walks to the river's edge and skips a stone across the water. Gwen watches with a smile. Lawrence offers her a stone.
No.
Try it.
Well, I can't make it skip like you.
She takes the stone and hurls it. It hits the water's surface and sinks.
You have to flick it.
Lawrence demonstrates, then hands Gwen a new stone.
May I?
Yes.
He stands behind her and guides her hand.
And you throw it. Turn your wrist up. Whip it.
He turns his body with hers. He holds her waist.
Make sure you swing your hips.
She glances at him bashfully, then heads to the water's edge. She tosses the stone and skips it.
Oh.
She grins at Lawrence. As he claps, she picks up another stone, tosses it in the air, and catches it.
What's it like in New York?
As she looks to the water and skips another stone, Lawrence winces and turns his head away. He fidgets with his ear. Gwen faces him and grins playfully.
Did you hear that?
Her smile fades.
What?
Lawrence takes a step toward her, his eyes shifting.
Horses.
Now men on horseback ride onto the overgrown grounds of Talbot Hall. As Lawrence strolls over, the pastor dismounts from a horse-drawn wagon.
Hello, Doctor. I thought our appointment was until Friday.
Come with us.
It's nearly the full moon. You were bitten by the beast. You bear his mark now.
Mr. Talbot, there are many of us here who were looking for a natural explanation. Help us.
Come on, Talbot. Show us your wound.
We're told it heals in an unnatural way.
As three men grab Lawrence, the pastor turns to the group.
Will you let him murder your wives and children?
The shot beheads a statue behind a man on horseback. His horse bucks him off. Sir John lowers the gun.
Sorry, Colonel.
I meant to shoot you.
Lawrence fights off his captors.
Sadly, I'm not the marksman I used to be. I must be getting old.
He's cursed. God has forsaken him.
Let us deal with him.
You know, you're trespassing on my land, and I could shoot you on the spot right now. I seek manservant. He's on the roof, and he happens to be a crack shot with a repeating rifle. And he will kill you. He'll kill the next eight of you before he has to reload, so please take yourself off my land. And if I see any of you trespassing this way again, I won't be so civil, if you take my meaning. Good day to you, Colonel.
The men turn their horses around.
Lawrence?
As the vigilantes ride away, Lawrence follows his father back toward the house. Gwen waits by the entrance. She stops Lawrence.
I'm bleeding.
Lawrence dabs his bloody lip with a handkerchief, then glances over his shoulder at the retreating man. In a weapons room, Sir John sets his rifle on a shelf and stows ammunition boxes in a cabinet. Gwen approaches.
How could they possibly think he's a threat to them?
Well, he's a stranger here in Blackmoor, Miss Cunliffe, and that makes him very dangerous.
Lawrence leans against the doorway.
Thank you.
Yes, you can also thank Singh. When he returns from the village, you're not the only one in the family who can act.
Lawrence smiles faintly as his father walks by, heading to the stairs.
Samson!
Sir John stops on the staircase and watches the two below. Gwen indicates Lawrence's bloody lip.
Let's get something to clean that.
Sir John continues upstairs. Later, Gwen carries a tray and enters a dignified dining room. Lawrence holds his scar as he sits at the long, elegant table.
Did they hurt your shoulder?
He politely gets up.
No. On the contrary, it feels much stronger than before.
That's good.
Lawrence half sits on the table's edge.
I was able to hold them, all three of them, back.
Gwen flashes a smile, then dips a cloth into a bowl of water. She gently dabs Lawrence's cut lip.
No, you mustn't listen to them. The villagers, they're backward and foolish.
Lawrence watches her intently.
Everything I hate about this place.
He stares at her, his lips parted hungrily. His gaze glides down the side of her face to the hollow of her throat. He sweeps his yearning stare up her smooth neck to the dimple in her chin. In slow motion, Gwen opens her pink bow-shaped lips. Lawrence grabs her wrist and looks up at her lustfully.
Lawrence.
Gwen steps back and Lawrence blinks out of his stupor. Gwen swallows and watches with unsettled eyes as he stands. He meets her gaze and holds it.
Excuse me.
He averts his eyes and strides out of the room. With a dazed look, Gwen watches him go. Her brow knits uneasily. Later in his room, Lawrence sits at a dressing table and examines his reflection in a mirror. Pulling aside his shirt collar, he inspects the smooth, scarless skin on his shoulder. He frowns and violently flips the mirror. He pounds a fist on the bureau. Now he hurries down the dark hallway to Gwen's room. Gwen strikes a match and lights a candle on her bedside table. She shoots an alarmed glance toward the door, then shakes out her match and rises. As she opens up, Lawrence gives her a pleading look.
What's happened?
You have to leave. Please pack your things.
Did I do something?
It's not safe here. You must return to London tonight. I'll be out here waiting.
Lawrence starts down the hall.
Lawrence, wait.
He turns. Gwen steps out of her room and regards him tenderly.
What are you afraid of?
He steps close, his intense eyes fixed on her.
If anything ever happened to you, I'd never forgive myself.
As Gwen stares at him, he shifts his brooding gaze. She nods and heads back to her room. Lawrence watches her. Gwen stops in the doorway. She gives him a parting look, disappears into her bedchamber, and closes the door. Later, outside. A window on a departing carriage frames a view of Lawrence as it drives away from Talbot Hall. Gwen rides on board, her dejected gaze fixed on him. The carriage turns onto the road and speeds off into the mist. Daytime. In the woods, a villager anchors a rope attached to a stag. Men with rifles stand guard nearby.
There are those who doubt the power of Satan. The power of Satan
to change men into beasts.
The pastor preaches in church.
But the ancient pagans did not doubt, nor did the prophets, did not Daniel or Nebuchadnezzar. But the proud king did not heed Daniel.
In town, Amberline passes a man boarding up a window.
He was made as unto a wolf and cast out from men. A beast has come among us. But God will defend his faithful. With his right hand, he will smite the foul demon.
A blacksmith casts silver bullets.
The enemy's ploy is a devious one.
Amberline watches.
Twisting the accursed into beasts, he seeks to bring us low. Make us as animals.
At Talbot Hall.
Teach us self-loathing so we forget that we are made in the image of Almighty God himself.
Samson.
The dog eyes Lawrence.
Why does our Lord tolerate this mockery?
The dog hurries around him.
Pride goeth before destruction. A haughty spirit before the fall.
The full moon hangs in the sky.
I say it is because we have sinned against him. Because our crimes reek to heaven and they demand vengeance.
In the tavern, patrons look up as Aberline strolls in. The inspector removes his gloves and glances around with narrowed eyes. He strides to a less crowded corner and places his gloves and umbrella on a table. Extracting a newspaper from his pocket, he sits and reads. A pale woman in an apron heads over, a dispirited look on her face. She stares expectantly at him.
Pint a bitter, please.
Aberline lowers his paper and meets her gaze.
Mrs. Kirk?
Why aren't you out, Emma Queen, trying to catch that thing that killed my husband?
As I don't know where the lunatic will strike, it seems the practical thing to do is to stay as near as possible to the potential victim. And seeing that 214 of the 309 residents of Blackmoor and its environs live within, what, 500 yards of this tavern? I was planning to spend the evening here.
Not Talbot Hall.
Why would you say that?
They're cursed. All of them.
Unfortunately, cursed does not give me a warrant to wander about Sir John's estate at night. Rules, Mrs. Kirk. They're all that keep us from a dog-eat-dog world, you know.
He gives her a nod, then resumes reading.
Pint a bitter, please.
Mrs. Kirk eyes the inspector disdainfully. As she turns away, Aberline glances up from his paper. Outside Talbot Hall, disdainfully. As she turns away, Aberline glances up from his paper. Outside Talbot Hall, leafless treetops flutter in the wind. Lawrence stands at a window and spies on his father, who walks away from the manor house with a lantern. Grabbing his jacket, Lawrence hurries out of the room. Now he carries a rifle as he trails Sir John through the woods to a clearing. He pauses as his father heads toward the mausoleum, then follows after him. In his quarters, Singh turns from a window. The full moon casts light on him as he sits and lifts a book from a stand on his table. Meanwhile, Sir John opens the mausoleum doors. Moonlight shines down from a window in the mausoleum, bathing the stone sarcophagus in the likeness of Lawrence's mother. Lawrence watches through the open door as his father kisses the sculpture's head and gently caresses it. Sir John steps out of sight. Lawrence enters and finds the burial chamber vacant. A shaft of moonlight illuminates the statue's delicately carved face. As he approaches the sarcophagus, he notices light seeping through the crack under a closed door. He opens it and stares down a narrow stairway. Lawrence grips his rifle in one hand and leans his other against the passage wall, guiding himself down the steep stairs. As he reaches the bottom, he slips. Grabbing hold of a lower archway, Lawrence steadies himself. He pulls the lapels of his jacket together against the subterranean chill and creeps onward to a dim tunnel. An open door at the end reveals bright candlelight. Lawrence hesitates. As he continues down the tunnel, his view of the mysterious chamber widens. Candles burn along the perimeter of a dome-shaped room, hewn from the rock. A leather armchair sits at the center. Lawrence draws closer. A metal hoop above the backrest forms a clamp big enough for a human head. Each of the chair's armrests ends with a carving of a ferocious animal head, and each bears a wrist restraint. Lawrence's gaze drifts to a haphazard cluster of candelabras caked with wax drippings. Their flames light a portrait of his mother. Lawrence recoils, startled to the quick.
It is a shrine to your beloved mother. She's a truly beautiful woman.
Sir John enters.
I know that losing her wounded you deeply. It is monstrous, a young boy seeing his mother like that. And I would have given my life, Lawrence, that you hadn't found us that night.
He lights two candles.
You must believe me when I tell you this, Lawrence. You do believe me, don't you? I loved your mother with a passion like the burning of the sun. Her death finished me. I was devastated. But I still prowl the house at night, searching for her.
He stares distantly.
I'm dead all the same.
He holds a candle up to his face.
Look into my eyes, Lawrence. You see, I'm quite dead.
He blows out the flame. Sir John rests a hand on his son's back.
My dear fellow, I wish I could tell you that the tragedy that has beset your life was over. But I'm afraid the darkest hours of hell lie before you.
Sir John shuts a door, locking himself into the chamber.
I don't think they'll kill you, Lawrence.
He peers out at his son.
They will blame you. The beast will have its day.
Lawrence steps toward the barred door.
The beast will out.
Sir John backs away through the shadows, his eyes flashing a canine glow. Lawrence heads off. His rifle lodges horizontally between the tunnel's walls. As he relaxes his grip, his ring slides off his pinky. He trembles. The rifle drops and the skin on his open palm darkens. As he grips a ledge, his knuckles become gnarled and furry. An unseen force appears to ram his head backward and he collapses. Now out of his shoes, his feet elongate, stretching the skin. A white film clouds his eye, then clears to reveal an amber iris. Blood drips onto a puddle's reflection of his fanged mouth. With long, gnarled fingers, he crawls up the steps. The muscles in his leg tense as his heel grows longer. The expanding bone strains his skin. His back bulges under his jacket. He walks upstairs on his monstrously transformed feet. Sharp claws extend from his hands. In his quarters, Singh hastily secures two locks on his door. In the tavern, Aberline rises from his chair and Mrs. Kirk drops a glass. The inspector rushes outside and glances around. Aberline mounts his horse and races across the village square. Light glows eerily in the mist as he rides off. Now in the woods, the colonel glances at his scruffy cohort as they hide near the captive stag. A villager cocks his gun. He waits, his finger on the trigger. The bound stag thrashes. As Lawrence lopes toward the gothic ruins of the priory, he falls into a pit. The villagers rush toward the pit. The ground gives out under one man who falls into it. The wolfman slashes his face with his claws. The werewolf drives his claws into the man's gut. Blood gurgles from his victim's mouth, now above ground. As the scruffy gunman aims into the pit, the wolfman pulls him in. The man turns to shoot, but the werewolf rips off his arm and hurls it out of the hole. It lands on the grass, still clutching the gun. The armed villagers fire into the pit. As the wolfman leaps out, one man accidentally shoots another. The creature punches a man into a stone wall. The stag breaks loose and runs away. The werewolf watches, then targets the colonel, who frantically races through the trees. As the wolfman gives chase, the colonel fires his pistol. The wolfman gallops after him on all fours, then switches to running upright. The colonel slips and gets stuck up to his waist in soupy mud. As the werewolf advances, the colonel shoots him in the shoulder, then raises the gun to his own head and pulls the trigger. It's empty. His eyes widen. With a mauling swipe, the wolfman beheads the colonel. Now Aberline ducks a branch as he rides into the foggy woods. Reaching the priory ruins, he slows his horse and dismounts. The inspector steps through the Gothic arched doorway of a partially intact wall. His gaze sweeps the ground, taking in the strewn bodies of the murdered villagers. The intestines of an eviscerated man lie scattered around his body, and a severed leg from another villager lies nearby. Meanwhile, Dr. Lloyd races through the woods, his rifle clutched in his hand. He stumbles, pushes himself back up, and continues running. After a few more yards, he bends over to catch his breath. He straightens and stares nervously into the dark woods. As he fires, the muzzle flash reveals the wolfman right beside him. At the ruins, Aberline looks around. Our view drifts from his haunted face to the full moon above.
Lawrence. Lawrence.
Morning. Lawrence sleeps.
Lawrence.
He opens his eyes. His face bruised and bloodied.
Wake up.
He looks around and knits his brow.
Lawrence.
He regards his smiling father. He winces, narrowing his eyes, and pushes himself out of a hollow in a tree. The actor staggers forward and drops his gaze. He finds his clothing tattered and bloodstained.
You've done terrible things.
The horrified man stares at his father. He hobbles away around the tree and lopes toward Talbot Hall. A posse of horsemen gallops toward him and surrounds him. Sir John strolls toward the scene, smiling faintly with his hands in his pockets. Aberline breaks away from the group and turns his horse toward the patriarch, but watches Lawrence over his shoulder. The newcomers aim rifles at him.
It is as you said, Inspector.
Lawrence obeys.
It is as you said.
I'm sorry, Sir John.
A man cold cocks Lawrence with the butt of his gun.
Be strong, Lawrence. Be strong.
Sir John grins. Words read Lambeth Asylum, London. In a treatment room.
Where's my father?
A doctor in a blood-stained apron enters with assistance.
I am sorry to see you back here with us, Lawrence.
Lawrence sits strapped to a chair.
You disappoint me.
He wears a straitjacket.
But we have made enormous strides in the treatment of delusions such as yours.
Where is my father?
The bespectacled doctor glances at an orderly who turns a crank. Gears turn and Lawrence's chair gradually tips backward into a brick pool. Chunks of ice float on the water's surface. Lawrence gasps in a breath just before the chair assembly submerges him completely. The bespectacled doctor watches eagerly. Beside him, an older doctor steps up with a syringe. The chair raises Lawrence back out of the water as the orderly cranks with a maniacal grin. The older doctor moves toward the shivering patient.
Brace it, Governor.
The doctor jabs the syringe into Lawrence's neck.
Where's my father? Where's my father? Where's my father?
The orderly turns the crank and the chair tilts Lawrence back into the water. The patient shakes his locked-in legs uselessly, then dips beneath the surface. Later, another syringe injects into his neck.
If you don't kill my father, you will kill again and again.
Now a machine electrocutes Lawrence. Later, an orderly wheels him on a gurney.
Did the Horatio tell me one thing? Does that think Alexander look at his fashion in the earth and smell so?
Lawrence hallucinates.
I hope this won't impede your return to the stage.
Alas, poor Yorick.
He holds up Ben's severed head.
Wake up. I heard something.
He imagines the demon-faced boy in his childhood bed.
Terrible things, though.
He pictures Gwen nude. His boyhood self rises from the dunking pool. Sir John turns the crank. A syringe plunges into adult Lawrence's neck. His mother's sarcophagus sculpture opens its eyes.
Look into my eyes, Lawrence. You see I'm quite dead.
Gwen stands in Lawrence's cell.
It's all right, Lawrence. Everything's all right. I'm going to take you home. Come with me. It's all right. Come on.
He takes her hands and she draws him to his feet. She tenderly strokes his face.
Just hold me.
Seeing them in a mirror, he imagines himself as the creature and jerks away. He peeks over her shoulder at the mirror. He imagines the wolf-like creature lunging at him from behind. Now a haggard Lauren sleeps in his cell, his mouth hanging open. He wakes up.
Lycanthropy. Lycanthropy.
His father sits in a chair beside him.
I contracted the disease, if that's what it is, in India and the Hindu Kush. The natives directed me to a cave high up in the mountains, where, according to legend, lived a strange creature, very strange creature. And after a great many days of climbing and searching, finally I came upon it. I found it. I found the cave and the strange creature that lived there. It was a little boy, a little wild, feral boy, powerfully strong.
In a cave, the balding demonic boy hunches over a campfire, then lunges. Back in the asylum.
Suddenly attacked me and bit me.
Sir John shows a bite scar on his arm.
So, I returned to my hunting companions in the valley below, thinking I'd been made the butt of a joke. I soon discovered otherwise.
In a flashback, Sir John, in lycanthrope form, cradles his dead wife, her bloody throat torn apart. Sir John's wolf face snarls.
You killed my mother.
Yeah, I suppose I did.
Chained at the neck, Lawrence sits up.
You should kill yourself.
Oh, I cannot tell you how often I've considered that. But life is far too glorious, Lawrence, especially to the cursed and the damned. Like myself.
Sir John stands.
Yeah. Every night of the full moon, for many years, I've been locked away in that crypt. By Singh, my faithful servant. 25 years. Then she came, didn't she? Hot and burning like the face of the moon.
Gwen.
Yeah, she would have taken your brother away from me, and they would have both vanished into the night forever. And although I was resigned to it, the beast in me was not. And Ben, you understand, had come to tell me that he was quite resolute in his decision to leave Talbot Hall for good and to take Gwen away from me. I became drunk and violent and extremely violent. And I struck out at Singh, who was trying to restrain me. And I knocked him out cold. Poor old Singh. Well, yeah. Anyways, as a consequence, I was unable to lock myself in the crypt that night, and I found your brother's body in a ditch not far from the house. He'd been torn to pieces. I know now it was a mistake to lock up the beast. Don't you think so, Lawrence? I should have let it run free. Kill or be killed.
Lawrence lunges.
I'll kill you!
The chain pulls taut, jerking him off his feet.
You have a long way to go yet, my young pup.
But your chance is coming. Soon enough.
Sir John points at a window with his thumb.
She'll be full tonight. Moon. I have a small gift for you, Lawrence, in the event you don't find life as glorious as I find it to be. Or not to be.
Sir John opens a straight razor. He winks and tosses the blade onto Lawrence's chest.
Deeply sorry about this, Lawrence. I do love you, dear boy. I find that hard to believe, in light of what has happened.
I'll kill you.
Sleep now.
I'll kill you.
Rest. God.
I'll kill you.
Wearing a stovepipe hat, Sir John strides off down a dingy corridor. He plays a harmonica. An inmate strapped into a wheelchair mindlessly bobs his head, and an orderly frog marches another inmate along with a pole and hoop at the man's neck. Nighttime. Clouds partially hide the moon as it hovers over the asylum. Inside, an orderly steers Lawrence on a wheelchair, bringing him to a lecture hall in the round.
Harmless hallucinations have manifested themselves into delusions of a horrific nature.
Dozens of doctors fill the tiered seats.
Mr. Talbot.
Lawrence wears a gag.
We are here tonight to illustrate conclusively that Mr. Talbot's fears are quite irrational. So, we will remain in this room together, and once Mr. Talbot has witnessed that the full moon holds no sway over him, that he remains A perfectly ordinary human being. He will have taken his first small step down the long road to mental recovery. Now, we are all aware that Mr. Talbot has suffered quite traumatic personal experiences.
Eberline arrives.
He witnessed his mother's self-mutilations. His young mind, unable to accept it, created a fantastical truth. That his father is to blame. That his father is literally a monster.
The bespectacled doctor faces Lawrence.
But your father is not a werewolf. You were not bitten by a werewolf. You will not become a werewolf.
Any more than I will sprout wings and fly out of that window.
The ragged-toothed orderly snickers too.
I think that Mr. Talbot has something to say to us.
The orderly swaggers forward and unties Lawrence's gag. Eberline watches curiously as Lawrence spits out the blood-stained strip of cloth.
Stop. Stop
speak up, Mr. Talbot. Forgive me, but we can't hear you.
You moron. Tonight I will kill all of you. I will kill all of you!
Yes, well, as you can see, Lycanthropy is...
Please do something about it!
A window shows clouds drifting away from the full moon.
Kill me.
Somewhere in the deep...
Kill me!
Lawrence struggles against his restraints.
Real.
Lawrence's cheekbone punches upward under his skin, and his fingers lengthen and gnarl. Eberline frowns. Other doctors lean forward. Lawrence's ring and pinky fingers shift out of alignment, pointing unnaturally to the side. His growing foot bursts out of his shoe. As Eberline gawks, Lawrence opens his mouth and agonizingly drops his head back. His teeth and jaws bleed and grow. Several onlookers stand. Behind the lecturing doctor, Lawrence's toes sprout claws. His half-transformed face writhes, resembling a demon. The lycanthrope's eyeballs plump in their sockets. Coarse hair spreads down his wrist as his fingers grow claws. He lashes his long tongue. Honegger turns around. Hair covers Lawrence's face and his ears grow pointy. Honegger backs away as the other doctors scramble. Eberline gapes. The wolfman bears his fangs. Doctors rush at the inward opening doors. They press helplessly against them, pinning them shut. Lawrence breaks his leather restraints and stands. As the bald orderly fills a syringe, the werewolf hurls his wheelchair. The orderly stabs the syringe into Lawrence's back. The werewolf hurls him at a half wall, ringing the lecture floor, then pounces with a snarl. Doctors cower as blood spurts into the air. Honegger fumbles to unlock a rear door. Peeking through a window, he spots a janitor.
It seems to be locked, sir.
On the lecture floor, Lawrence rips a foot-long hunk of bloody flesh from the orderly's abdomen. He notices Honegger pounding on the rear door and drops it. The doctor shatters the door's window with a chair. The wolfman stalks toward him. Lawrence seizes him and launches him headfirst through a window. Honegger plummets two stories and lands on a spiked fence. Blood spews from his gut. Inside, the doctors break down the main doors and stampede. The werewolf hops onto the roof and leaps away. Down below, doctors race out of the asylum. Eberline gawks at Honegger's body, then watches as Lawrence bounds across a building's pediment. The investigator jogs after him. Now the wolfman bounds along a rooftop. Jumping onto another roof, he reaches a griffin gargoyle and leans on its folded wings. He peers out over the city, then turns his face toward the moon. Lawrence leaps down. Elsewhere, Eberline finds a constable.
Davis.
Yes, sir.
Are you on?
Yes, sir.
Give me your revolver. Quickly.
Eberline watches the wolfman sprint past smoking chimneys. Eberline fires at him from the street. the werewolf drops onto all fours and lopes off. He jumps to a narrow roof, then leaps to a longer one. Aberline stops on a parallel street. As Lawrence bounds off, a wide building blocks Aberline's path. The inspector dashes inside, interrupting a private chamber music concert. He topples a waiter and several musicians and shoves through the well-to-do audience toward a rear door. Aberline darts outside. He scans the nearby rooftops but finds them vacant. Elsewhere, the wolfman jumps to another rooftop, smashing a chimney pipe. On the ground, Aberline finds another inspector and constable.
Carter! Sir, you got a pistol?
Yes, sir.
Follow me.
Telegraph the yard. Issue weapons.
All right, sir.
Now! Right away, sir!
As the constable scrambles away, Aberline barrels off with Carter.
Don't suppose we have any silver bullets?
What?
Nearby, Lawrence leaps down into a plaza. He lands on a constable and darts to his feet. Bystanders flee. A nearby double-decker omnibus motors along, steam billowing from its exhaust pipe. The driver veers and the bus runs over a pedestrian. The whole vehicle tips over. Lawrence leaps up onto its side, then snarls through a window at the men and women trapped on board. Carter shoots at it. A constable fires too. The werewolf breaks a window and dives into the bus, slashing a woman and two men. Blood sprays onto the ceiling. Now the wolfman runs off. Nearby, Aberline gathers more lawmen.
You two with me.
As the wolfman chases Londoners down an alley, two constables fire from a rooftop. Lawrence evades down an intersecting alley, then drops to all fours and lopes forward. Aberline and his men block the alley's mouth and take aim.
Steady.
A police wagon filled with more armed officers pulls up behind the men, creating a blockade. They shoot at the wolfman. As the beast closes in, some officers retreat. The wolfman leaps over the wagon and bolts, vanishing into the city. Aberline gapes after him.
God help us.
Fade to black. Now, in a dimly lit tunnel, the wolfman's shadow slips over a block wall. The wolfman halts and crouches at the mouth of the passage, his jagged fangs framed by bulbous black cheeks. He gazes at the Tower Bridge looming above the River Thames in the mist, then crawls to the nearby bank and laps from the river like a dog. The werewolf glances around warily, then lowers his head to the rippling moonlit water and continues to drink. Night turns to a rainy day. A ship sails under the bridge, and sunlight faintly brightens the mouth of the tunnel. Deeper beneath its arched ceiling, a disheveled Lawrence crouches in the shadows, peeking uneasily outside. In human form, he hobbles to a puddle and kneels. Cupping his hands, he scoops up some water and wipes his face. Ripples on the puddle's surface subside, and he glimpses his blood-smeared reflection, then glances nervously at the ceiling. He dips his hands back into the puddle and scours his grimy face. Now Gwen hurries across a busy cobblestone street through a downpour. She approaches the entrance of a shop on the corner, lowers her umbrella, and unlocks the door. Inside, Gwen slides her umbrella into a stand and turns on several electric chandeliers. She shuts the door and picks up some mail, then rifles through it and tosses it onto a table with her keys. Doffing her jacket, Gwen strolls past the fine artwork, statuary, and Grecian-style urns crowding the space, then halts near a freestanding wooden arch. Anxiously touching her waist, she stalks beneath the archway, then sidles between several urns and vases. She passes a glass cabinet displaying porcelainware, reaches a pair of French doors, and glances around quizzically. The shop's owner flinches and whirls around.
Who's there?
A man's arm flops out from under a table.
Lawrence, what are you doing here?
Bracing himself on one arm, he wearily sits up.
What have they done to you?
She crouches and knits her brow.
I am what they say I am. I'm a monster. And so is my father. He killed Ben.
A stunned Gwen closes her gaping lips.
And my mother, too.
Later in a back office, Lawrence gazes out a window with his hands clasped prayerfully. He wears a tie and clean clothes. As he bows his head and crosses himself, Gwen enters behind him. Lawrence glances at a nearby chair and she takes a seat, eyeing him up and down. He gazes back at her with weary eyes.
I can help you.
There's no help for me.
If such things exist, if they are possible, then everything is. Magic. God.
He stares at her intently, and she nods.
I can find a way to stop it.
Lawrence lowers his gaze and kneels before her.
I must confess, I envy my brother for the days he had with you.
He locks eyes with her.
What joy he must have felt.
He kisses her hand.
I would have given anything I own to have known you in another life. I must get back to Talbot Hall and end this.
He rises and Gwen drops her gaze. She tearfully wipes her brow and lips, then stands.
Lawrence, please let me help you.
You already have.
He heads out, his gaze lingering on her. She strides after him.
Lawrence, don't. Just stay here with me. Stay here with me.
In her shop, she blocks his path as he reaches the French doors. She trails a hand down his chest to his arm and takes his hand in hers. Lawrence gazes into her eyes. Gwen fidgets, stepping closer. Planting her other hand on his chest, her thumb strokes his tie, and Lawrence bows his head. She glances nervously between his eyes and lips, then leans forward. Lawrence lifts his head and they share a passionate kiss, wrapping their arms around each other. She cups his face in her hand. She peeks over his shoulder. Now Gwen opens the front door and finds Aberline outside.
Miss Conliff, good morning.
Inspector?
May I interpose?
Gwen hesitantly steps aside and Aberline creeps in and takes off his hat. Before any of his men follow, she shuts the door, then hurries to face him, cutting him off from the rest of the shop.
I must ask you directly, have you seen Lawrence Talbot? I'm sure by now you've heard of his escape.
Yes, I've heard, and no, I haven't seen him.
Miss Conliff, I cannot stress to you enough the mortal peril you're in. Should you find yourself...
A newspaper reads, "Escaped lunatic at large. Dozens killed by monster." It shows sketches of the beast terrorizing the city.
Thank you, I'll be careful.
He folds the paper and steps toward her.
Miss Conliff, I admire your noble intentions. You think you can save him, but you can't. I must insist you come with
insist.
Me.
He grabs her arm.
He's not here, Inspector. Take your hand off me.
Outside, a detective drags Gwen to a police wagon. Back in her shop, Aberline strides through with his revolver at the ready. He finds a mirror with a man's leg standing behind it.
Talbot, raise your arms and step out where I can see you.
He aims directly at the mirror.
Talbot!
As Aberline lowers his weapon, Carter joins him. They study a satyr statue standing behind the mirror's empty frame.
Now there's some bad luck for you.
Aberline glares, his teeth clenched. Now outside, a horse-drawn carriage rolls down a busy street. Among the bustling pedestrians, Lawrence crosses the road wearing a top hat. He keeps his hand stuffed in the pocket.
Now there's some bad luck for you.
Aberline glares, his teeth clenched. Now outside, a horse-drawn carriage rolls down a busy street. Among the bustling pedestrians, Lawrence crosses the road wearing a top hat. He keeps his hand stuffed in the pockets of a long overcoat. Now Gwen's hand slides a book aside to reveal an illustration of a werewolf. In her back office, she removes a pen from an inkwell and takes notes on her reading. She turns a page and reveals a passage on lycanthropy with more illustrations. One depicts a wolfman holding a maiden in his teeth, and another shows a feral man biting an infant. Studying the book intently, Gwen bites a thumbnail. She finds a page labeled Ancient Gypsy Lore and leans forward. Looking up, she stares off with a knitted brow. Now outside, Lawrence hikes up to the top of a hill. Carrying a walking stick and wearing a newsboy cap, he halts and gazes back at London in the distance. Later, a train crossing a bridge puffs a long plume of smoke over its rail cars. On board, Gwen stares out her passenger window. White fur lines the lowered hood of her coat. Now Lawrence crosses a footbridge over a ravine. Later, a view from under the wide branches of a leafy tree shows Gwen galloping across a field on horseback. Lawrence climbs down a rocky hill to a lake surrounded by cliffs. Now Gwen rides up to a horse-drawn, barrel-shaped wagon.
Looking for a woman called Maleva. Do you know her?
She turned up.
She eyes the mustache driver and his passenger, then rides past their Vardo. Behind it, the young gypsy woman with darkly lined eyes watches her. Now Lawrence hides beneath an arched bridge as a horse-drawn carriage rolls over it. Later, he hikes through a forest. Loggers using a two-man saw cut through the trunk of a tree. Now a stone reads to Blackmoor, 16 miles. A carriage passes stone ruins. An open-air wagon hauling a band of men follows. In the carriage, Aberline loads his revolver and tosses a small box to Carter, who finds silver bullets inside. The inspectors share a grim look. Nighttime. A lone figure treads across a cliff, and passing clouds veil a moon three-quarters full as it arcs overhead. Daytime. In Blackmoor, a horse-drawn carriage and a few villagers hurry along a dirt road. Gwen strides across it, toting two saddlebags, and enters the stable. Inside, a groom tends to her horse. She hands him her things. The groom accepts them and leads the horse into the sunlight outside. Lingering in the shadows, Gwen slips into her fur-hooded coat. Maleva creeps inside behind her. Gwen whirls around.
What is it you want from me?
The gypsy woman draws closer, and Gwen fearfully retreats deeper into the stable. Glancing uneasily across the hay-strewn floor, she notices a second groom going about his business and steps closer.
Lawrence Talbot, you know what happened to him. You understand it. Listen to me. I need you to help me.
Leave him to his fate.
I have to save him.
Maleva sympathetically shakes her head.
Do you love him?
Gwen eyes her pleadingly.
Just tell me what to do.
Will you condemn him? Or will you set him free? Do you know what that means?
Yes. But I can't. I can't do that. He's still there. I know he is. I know I can save him. I'm begging you, tell me what to do.
There is no cure.
The gaunt-cheeked gypsy glances aside.
You are risking your life.
Gwen nods. Maleva touches her face and taps her forehead.
May the saints protect you and give you strength to do what you must.
On the street, the horse-drawn open-air wagon pulls up and the men debark. The carriage parks beside it and Aberline climbs out, followed by Carter, who carries a rifle. The inspectors survey the village, turning their heads in unison. Now in the tavern, Mrs. Kirk looks up as the armed band enters. She and two villagers eye them as they fill the room.
You're sure he'll come? Yeah, quite sure.
Aberline follows them in and shuts the door.
Right.
He addresses the men individually.
Take Priory Road. Railway station. South Garden to the river. Tell Sir John we're here and stay close to the estate, but not too close. If you see Talbot, don't get caught in conversation. Shoot him and kill him.
He faces Carter.
On sight.
The goateed inspector gives a resolute nod. Dusk. Lawrence treks across a sprawling moor. Mist hangs in a nearby valley and rolling hills stretch to the cloudy horizon. Nighttime. Lawrence marches through the shadowy woods, then halts and leans on a tree. Catching his breath, he stares past the edge of the woods at the side of his father's manor. Abandoning the trees, he plods off toward Talbot Hall. Cut to black. Lawrence cracks the front door open and stalks into the dimly lit grand entryway and shuts it behind him. The wide staircase and the great hall stand vacant. Rays of light filter in through windows. Lawrence lights a candle set within a bell-like reflector and finds Sing's corpse gaping at him. He leaps back. The body, missing one eye, hangs impaled from a stand of spears. Shining his lantern over its bare chest, Lawrence finds a key on a chain and yanks it off. He grabs an elephant gun from a rack made of taxidermied hooves, then creeps upstairs, passing Singh's pale, motionless face. Outside, the moon gleams in the cloudy sky. A detective gallops up to Aberline in the village.
Carter hasn't reported. He's not at his post in front of the house.
Gwen rides up on her white horse.
Just can't lift. Wait!
She speeds off.
Get the others.
The inspector mounts his own horse and rides off after her through the misty village. Now at Talbot Hall, the lantern peeks around a corner. Lawrence follows, his dark eyes staring intently down a shadowy hallway. Lawrence scans the vacant passage and slinks onward, aiming his lantern from his waist. A view from within a dark room shows Lawrence slow, peek through the door, then hurry on. Stark light outlines his father's bearded silhouette in the darkness. Down the hall, Lawrence cautiously shoves open the door to Singh's quarters. The actor strides in, sets his lantern down, and kneels before a wooden chest. He quickly unlocks it with Singh's key, then stands and raises the ornately decorated lid. Lawrence seizes his elephant gun and opens the chamber, then opens a box of silver bullets in the chest and loads the weapon. Meanwhile, Gwen rides through the forest, galloping between stands of towering trees. In Singh's quarters, Lawrence cocks one hammer of the double-barreled elephant gun and stares across the room. In a shadowy hallway downstairs, a man's legs stride past, briefly blocking a view through a doorway and into a stairwell. The doorway frames Lawrence as he prowls downstairs, holding his weapon at the ready. He enters the hallway. He moves toward a moonlit window at the end of the long wood-paneled hall, then edges toward a closed door. Halting, he leans toward it and listens. He looks up and raises his weapon, then skulks onward, leaving the door. The actor jerks his gun up to eye level and creeps ahead to a second door. Finding it cracked open, Lawrence aims his weapon through the gap, then inches forward and kicks it open wide. Staring down the gun's barrel, he strides inside and scans the long room. Rays of moonlight shine in through two windows, leaving most of the room in shadow. Lawrence steps forward, his brow knit anxiously. Rounding the corner of the bed, he finds a hulking figure lurking in a pitch-black shadow on the floor. He aims at it steadily, his dark eyes narrowed fearfully. Samson leaps up and darts out of the room. Hugging his gun, Lawrence falls wearily against a wardrobe. Now Lawrence stops in the doorway and peeks into the shadowy hall. Still toting his rifle, he leans against the doorframe. The actor peers over his shoulder. Downstairs, Sir John's hands gently work the piano keys, leaving behind smudged fingerprints in blood. Lawrence creeps into the great hall, holding his rifle at the ready. Firelight flickers against the back of a chair as he takes aim. The piano sits vacant, and the rest of the room lies motionless. Sweeping his gaze to the sitting area in front of the fireplace, he spots a man's arm resting on the bolster of a high-backed chair. Lawrence warily circles around to the front of the chair. Aiming steadily at it, the actor studies it with one eyebrow arched. Carter's dead body slumps on the leather upholstery, his face streaked with blood. Lawrence whirls around and finds Sir John seated at the piano once again, his hair slicked neatly back.
I will arise and go to my father.
His face streaked with blood. Lawrence whirls around and finds Sir John seated at the piano once again, his hair slicked neatly back.
I will arise and go to my father, and I will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee. I am no more worthy to be called thy son.
Lawrence stalks toward him, aiming the rifle. He wipes sweat from his brow. Sir John gazes off blankly, then looks up.
And lo and behold, there he stands, the prodigal son, for he has returned.
The actor swallows uneasily. Sir John stands and picks up his walking stick.
Shall I have my own robe brought to be placed upon your shoulders? Rings for your fingers, shoes for your feet?
All you should do is pray. But we both know it wouldn't do any good.
Finita la commedia. Are those things silver bullets in my gun?
I'm sorry.
You have me at a disadvantage. It makes me happy.
What does?
Well, seeing you here like this. My son returned.
Sir John winks.
It is glorious, isn't it?
No, it's hell.
Sir John uses his cane to lift Lawrence's aim to his own head.
The beast is the beast. Let it run free.
Lawrence pulls the trigger. He tries again. Sir John strikes him with the walking stick. Lawrence swings the gun, which shatters two oil lamps and starts a fire. His father clocks him.
Poor little Lawrence. You were the fragile one. I removed the powder from those shells many, many years ago. But I confess, I was quite overwhelmed by your enormous courage. Finally, you're the man I always wanted to be.
Sir John hits him again.
My boy.
The father boots him in the gut. As his son clambers upright, Sir John clubs his back with a walking stick. He lifts his son's chin with the silver handle, then winds up for a second blow. Lawrence catches the handle and draws a hidden rapier from within the stick. He stabs at Sir John, but the father shoves him over a table. Behind him, the fire spreads.
Yes.
Sir John drags him to a window.
See her, Lawrence? You feel her presence, her power?
They stare at the moon.
She'll be here soon. Coming from darkness into light.
Lawrence grabs at his father, but Sir John slings him away. The actor seizes his father's neck and pins him to a table.
You're heir to my kingdom, Lawrence. You've always been heir to my kingdom.
Sir John's face grows furry. Lawrence's neck cracks. His father snarls, transforming rapidly. Outside, Gwen gallops through the woods. In the great hall, Sir John's clawed hand grips a table. Still in human form, Lawrence backs off and twitches grotesquely. As a wolf, Sir John shoves Lawrence across the room. He tumbles over the piano. Lawrence slams a clawed hand onto the piano, then stands, fully transformed, and faces his father. Sir John rips off his shirt. The werewolves rush each other, then clash in midair. They knock over a floor lamp, which ignites more of the floor. Sir John bites his son's shoulder. Lawrence claws at his father's back, and Sir John rears up. He flings Lawrence into a wall. The wolfman plummets down, and another floor lamp topples, exploding with fire. As his father circles him, Lawrence pushes himself up, dripping blood. Sir John lunges. Lawrence dodges, tumbling up a wall. Leaping off, he tackles his father, then slams his head against the floor. Sir John bats him aside, and Lawrence skids across the floor, digging his claws into the wood. His father runs at it, and they tumble over furniture. Sir John rips a chunk of flesh out of his son's chest, then drags him to his feet and punches him. Pouncing, he pins Lawrence face down and bites more bloody hunks out of his back. He stands over his son as Lawrence writhes. Outside, Gwen gallops down the road toward Talbot Hall. Inside, Sir John heaves Lawrence across the room. The werewolf crashes down, then weakly lifts his head. His father leaps at him. Lawrence rolls onto his back. Raising his legs, he kicks Sir John into the fireplace. Flames billow outward. Lawrence stands and eagerly works his tongue. Consumed by fire, Sir John clambers out of the hearth, then slashes at his son. Lawrence dodges as his father flails. He claws his father across the chest. Sir John stares at his wounds, then lifts his burnt, hairless head. Lawrence decapitates him with a powerful swipe. Sir John's head lands across the room on the floor. His jaw smacks uselessly and goes still. His body collapses. Lawrence tips his head back. Flames lick at his mother's portrait above the fireplace. In the grand entryway, a window shows Gwen right up outside. She dismounts her white horse, runs indoors, and makes for the great hall.
Lawrence! Lawrence!
She halts, gaping tearfully. Lawrence turns. His wolfish face snarls, and Gwen backs away. Aberline arrives behind her, steps up, and aims a revolver at the wolfman. Gwen shoves his arm and the shot misses. The wolfman pins them both. Gwen slips out of her cloak and crawls away. Lawrence bites Aberline's shoulder. Gwen grabs his dropped revolver. The werewolf hurls Aberline into a rack of spears and polearms, then starts after Gwen. Aberline throws a spear, impaling the wolfman. The creature yanks it out. The inspector stalks forward with an exotic halberd. Outside, Gwen races off. Inside, Aberline slashes at Lawrence, but the wolfman dodges. A lamp explodes and Aberline crumbles. Through a window, Lawrence spots Gwen's fleeing form at the edge of the woods. He jumps through the glass. Aberline kneels on the floor, then spots the bloody rapier and grabs its silver wolf head handle. As the wolfman dashes off outside, Aberline leaves the great hall with the sword and exits into the night air. In the woods, gray mist glows with moonlight, silhouetting Gwen as she races away. Still clutching the gun, she glances fearfully over her shoulder. The wolfman sprints after her. In the great hall, flames consume the portrait of Lawrence's mother. Later, the fire consumes the entire mansion. In the woods, armed men advance with torches. Nearby, Gwen races along the bottom of a slope. Her dress catches on a branch and she stumbles, then rushes onward. Elsewhere, Aberline plods along a trail behind the rest of the men. A detective joins him.
Are you sure you're all right, sir?
Go on.
The detective trots off. The wolfman jogs along a tree-lined ridge. Nearby, Gwen hides behind a tree. She bolts. The wolfman sniffs the air. He chases after her. Gwen runs up to the edge of the sunken river gorge, windmilling her arms to keep from falling off. The nearby waterfall gleams like silver in the moonlight. The terrified young woman glances over her shoulder, then creeps away from the cliff's edge. Her chest heaves and her doe-like eyes search her surroundings. Her dark tousled hair frames her pale face. As she catches her breath, she scans the misty woods. The silhouetted trees stand motionless. She spots the wolfman lurking beside a tree. Gwen aims the revolver at him. As rays of moonlight beam down behind him, the wolfman stalks closer. Gwen's arms quake and she swallows nervously. The wolfman bares his fangs and advances with plodding steps. Gwen backs toward the gorge cliff.
Look at me, Lawrence. You know me. You know who I am.
She drops the gun. He pins her down. He snarls, looming over her. She struggles.
Lawrence, you know me. You know me. Remember me. Look at me.
Lawrence cocks his head and blinks, studying her.
It's Gwen. Lawrence, it's Gwen. Please.
The werewolf eyes her. His narrowed eyes relax and widen slightly. Gwen quivers beneath him, gazing up pleadingly and knitting her brow. Her rosy lips hang slack. Lawrence's dark wolf-like nose flares as he sniffs at her. His angry brow softens. Lawrence whirls around, staring over his shoulder. Torches glimmer over a short rise in the distance. Gwen turns her head, squeezes her eyes shut, and reaches for the gun. The men and their hounds crest the ridge. Gwen wraps her fingers around the weapon's stock and lifts it, quaveringly aiming at Lawrence's chest. Facing her again, he bares his jagged teeth and lunges. Gwen fires. Blood spurts out his back. He crouches over her, quivering, then tips his head and falls aside. Gwen sits up, her frightened stare growing sorrowful. As she inches away from him, his clawed hand seizes her wrist. Gwen jerks her arm, struggling to escape his grip, but he holds tight. The rest of his body lies motionless. Gwen stops struggling and leans closer, peeking at his face as he lies with his back to her. Lawrence's dark, hairy hand grows paler. The fur on his hand vanishes, along with the fur on his arm. The thick hair covering his face thins, becoming less bushy, then vanishes completely, leaving him clean-shaven and in human form. Gwen takes his arm in both of hers and scoots closer, wedging her knees behind his back as she leans over him. She rolls him toward her, then hefts him into her lap and cradles his head to her chest. She tenderly cups his smooth cheek in her hand and his eyes flutter open. Lawrence's gaze drifts, then lifts to her face.
Gwen.
she strokes his chest.
It had to be this way.
She rocks him.
I'm sorry.
As she caresses his face, he squeezes her hand.
Thank you.
His eyelids lower, then shut. His hand falls limply away from hers, and his head lolls off her lap. She hugs him close and kisses his forehead, then rests her cheek against it and resumes rocking him. Aberline's men encircle her, their torches ablaze. The inspector steps forward, and Gwen looks to him, her chin trembling. The inspector clutches his chest. He leans against a tree and regretfully bows his head. Gwen returns her grief-stricken gaze to Lawrence. Aberline still carries the rapier in one hand. Its silver wolf's head handle gleams above his fist. The inspector lifts his head and eyes the sky. Our view rises up through tangles of tree branches silhouetted against the moon's brilliant glow. Dark clouds drift over its face. We pass the last of the nearly bare branches as the full moon shines through a gap in the drifting clouds.
It is said there is no sin in killing a beast. Only in killing a man.
Fire consumes Talbot Hall. At dawn, a distant column of smoke rises from the valley.
But where does one begin and the other end?
The moors sprawl to the horizon under a pink and gray sky. Fade to black.